Our next case is 2021-448, Disciplinary Counsel versus Samuel Ray Smith II. For the respondent, Mr. Is it Genshaft?
Yes, it is.
Proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Chief Justice O'Connor, other justices, my name is Nelson Genshaft. I'm here representing Sam Smith, a young lawyer in Cleveland who practices in the area of criminal defense and civil litigation. He comes here with a record of having been disciplined in another case for which he was suspended for 6 months, and he's back, unfortunately, before this court on additional
charges. Similar actions.
Well, I would distinguish that, Your Honor.
Some of them are similar actions.
Some of them may be, yes.
Counsel, he really wasn't suspended for 6 months.
He was suspended for two years.
He was for 18 months, right? With the final 12 months stayed if he engages in no further misconduct.
Correct.
Is this further misconduct?
It's different misconduct.
So it's further. It's additional.
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
So what you're here for is to dispute the sanction,
correct?
Or I should say the recommendation of 2 years, 18 months out with six stayed this time, correct?
Correct.
All right.
And what I'm arguing here is mitigation. And what I think this court should do is go through each of the counts for which Mr. Smith was found liable, found misconduct, and analyze them through the lens of mitigation. Our view is that the sanction is too severe and that the mitigation evidence will show that it should be reduced to either a fully stayed suspension or at most 6 months. If you look at each of the individual counts, and I'm going to start with the count one, Stacey Lattimore. This is a case in which Mr. Smith visited his client in jail. She was there for other charges. Shaker Heights urged him to go and see if she could clean up past cases that she had pending before that court. He did a no-contact visit with her. And unfortunately, he signed a plea agreement on her behalf.
Which was absolutely unnecessary because she could have signed that document.
He could have made arrangements to
There's a partition or break in the partition, according to what I read. And the paper could have been slipped to her. She signs it. She slips it back, right?
Correct, and I think my client testified that that he could have made arrangements with a bailiff or a prison personnel to take the paper into Ms. Lattimore and have her sign it.
Right, instead?
He left himself vulnerable, no question.
Pardon me?
He left himself vulnerable to the classic he said, she said situation. Not a good practice.
Well, we know that he notarized his phony signature of his client's name, which I believe he misspelled. So he wasn't even real good at that.
No question. No question. He should have indicated that he was signing with her verbal approval, if that's what he was doing.
Okay, here's what I don't understand about reading through this whole thing, because what he did, the things he's done, show me he doesn't know how to be an attorney. He doesn't know the law. He doesn't know what's in the disciplinary code, when he's stepping over it. The exchange about his research for one of his clients and the defense when there was clearly a statute of limitations issue, and he didn't, he made some kind of what I would classify as ridiculous response when he didn't do any research at all, or if he did do research, he didn't understand what he was reading. I don't think he did any research. The bottom line is your client doesn't know how to be an attorney.
Well, he's learning from his past mistakes, and he's trying.
At the expense of his clients.
Well, he made mistakes, there's no question. We've stipulated to those mistakes.
So, Counselor,
with respect to the research.
Counselor, let me ask you quickly over here. Sorry.
Sorry.
I know it's
yes.
difficult. It does seem here like the mitigating factors, no ill intent, no fraud, but he's made some mistakes here that he made prior that caused him to be disciplined, made some of the same mistakes, particularly with regard to not putting funds into an IOLTA account, putting them into his personal account. And so there does seem to be some struggles here with law practice management. What would having a reduced sanction do to help him along with that and to protect clients or future clients?
Well, Your Honor, let me distinguish his past mistakes on his IOLTA. With respect to count four, Ms. Payton, he took that money in long before the Vinson grievance occurred in 2016, I believe.
Okay, but didn't he also deposit another client's
yes,
fund?
Yes, with Colette McLeod.
Yes.
He took in money, but again, he wasn't aware of the Vinson grievance at the time. He should have known that you put your, when you take in money from a client, you put it in your IOLTA. No question.
He had an IOLTA account.
He did. Yes, he did. He didn't use it. But with respect to...
But I guess so the question becomes here, how does a reduced sanction, because that's what you're arguing for here.
Correct.
How does a reduced sanction help him to be better at his law practice and to protect clients?
The board has recommended a monitor. The board has recommended CLE classes, especially in IOLTA and law practice management. He would benefit from those, no question.
Were any of those recommendations part of his previous case?
No. I didn't handle the previous case, but I don't believe.
I realized.
No.
But did the board ask for a monitor in the previous case?
Not that I'm aware of. No, Your Honor.
Okay. Well, I'll have to look at that.
Okay. But with respect to the research, it may have been bad, it may have been faulty, but if you look at stipulated Exhibit 101, there's extensive case law citation for his belief that the continuing harm to Ms. Payton told the statute of limitations. Okay? So it's not without some basis. And what we have argued is that he may have been wrong, but that does not make it unethical.
Do you know, Counselor, whether there was an agreement between Mr. Smith and the other Mr. Smith who he was going to try to get to take over some of his cases?
Verbal. They met several times, according to the record. The respondent handed Smith III some 25 files, physically handed it to him, but he didn't protect himself by memorializing these cases that he was, shifting the burden to Smith III to take over the client. I would have handled it much differently. I would have written a letter to each client saying, here's your file. I've consulted with this lawyer, Smith III. He's a good lawyer. If you want to talk to him, go talk to him. And then we wouldn't be here today, at least on those issues. That's not what happened. He trusted Smith III, someone he had a friendship with for over a long period of time.
But is there any discussion about compensation from it? Or I would suspect that a lawyer wouldn't expect another lawyer to take over his caseload without any compensation.
Yeah, there is nothing in the record to establish that they had that discussion. I would expect Smith III to make arrangements with the client upon accepting the file and accepting the case.
But hadn't the clients already paid Mr. Smith, your client?
In some cases. Some of them were contingent fee cases, I believe. Yes, there was some payment made.
So there was a request for Smith III to take over the case. with no funds available to give him from the IOLTA account from the client's deposits, and then expect the clients to pay a second lawyer to take over the case?
There's nothing in the record to establish
that, clear one
that
way or the other.
Arrangement.
Okay.
And yes, it was murky, it was vague, I admit it, it was not well handled. It was a bad handoff, if you will, to a sports analogy.
But I mean, I applaud his attempts for trying to make sure something happened, but okay, thank you.
Right. So with respect to Lattimore, count one, we are arguing that the determination by the board that they could not determine that Lattimore had directed Smith, the respondent, that she would not sign the plea agreement. They made no finding on that. They couldn't decide whether Lattimore was a manipulator or a victim. The rest of the charges, and I'm carving out the notarial attestation because that definitely is a stipulated violation, but the rest of the charges, misrepresenting something to a court, committing dishonesty or fraud, actions that prevent the administration of justice, they don't logically flow if Smith III believed he had the authority to sign, or Smith, my client, Smith, to sign the plea agreement. Those just don't stand up. With respect to the counts two and three, that both involve his failure to send the client a certified letter. He actually sent a letter to one of them, Huffman, which was stipulated Exhibit 86. He sent it to the wrong address because he didn't have her address, according to the record. But in both cases, he talked to them, he texted them or emailed them, and they knew that he had been suspended. So again, they were aware, they had actual knowledge of his suspension, and they could have functioned. In fact, one of them, Ms. McLeod, talked to other lawyers. Now, she talked to other lawyers about filing a grievance or filing a malpractice action against the respondent, but she very well could have protected her case as she talked to other lawyers. The count four involves Alberta Payton, and Chief Justice alluded to the faulty research that, as she sees it, in that case, the board called it far-fetched and superficial, but nevertheless stipulated Exhibit 101 is Sam Smith's letter to Scott Drexel, the disciplinary counsel, explaining his research, explaining his thinking. Again, if you want to call that bad, I would agree with you, faulty, but not unethical. This court can do whatever it wants as far as sanctions, as you know. We've argued for mitigation. We've also argued that to distinguish the cases that the disciplinary counsel has offered, specifically distinguishing Large, in which that case there was a finding of a selfish motive, which wasn't here, a failure to cooperate, which isn't here, the Marshall case, a pattern of misconduct, which has not been shown here, and Brueggemann, which involved a false certification of a title document, which is not here. Of course, we have the problem with the attestation in the Lattimore notary, which we have agreed is a problem. Rather, the cases that we have offered, Glitzenstein, Gwynn, and Mariotti, we think are closer to the mark and take into account the mitigation that that we offer to the court. And those are cases in which the suspension was fully stayed. So we ask the court to yes, appoint a monitor, and yes, order CLE, but take into account the mitigation evidence and suspend a respondent for 2 years on a fully stayed basis. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Farwick?
Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court, my name is Audrey Varwig, and I represent the Relator Disciplinary Council. To answer Your Honor's question, there was no monitoring in the ordered in the previous case. And in response to Justice Stewart's question, Smith III did testify regarding the conversations that he had with the respondent regarding taking over his files, and he was very clear that he did not agree to take the Payton file, the McLeod file, or the Huffman file. He in fact testified that he felt like the respondent was bullying him into taking over his cases. There are three reasons why the court should.
Let me go back to that briefly. So does that then suggest to you that his statements of making to his clients that another lawyer will contact you, another lawyer will contact you, don't worry, it'll be taken care of, was not accurate? Or is there the possibility that it was a lawyer other than Smith III?
No, and there may have been a misunderstanding between the two of them because Smith III did testify that he regretted the conversations were all too casual. He did not actually put it in writing, his refusal to take those three cases. However, it was the respondent's responsibility to make sure that these clients were informed of his suspension and that their files were taken care of.
But they were informed, correct? There's no question they were informed. There's some question about the appropriate measure of informing them, but they were informed. He did not hide that fact.
They were. However, they weren't aware that it was an actual six-month suspension. His communications to them indicated that he was temporarily suspended from the practice of law. And it's our position that because his communications to them were over the phone and by text message, those were all too casual. They were not effective in communicating to his clients. In particular,
Why weren't they effective? They certainly aren't accurate under the rules, but why isn't actual knowledge effective?
Well, for example, a month later, Ms. McLeod sent him another text message saying, "How are you going to go about handling my case now?" Just 1 month later. So when this court ordered that the notice was to go by certified mail and that he should submit proof that he served his clients by certified mail, he needed to comply with that.
Well, but if so, let me ask this too. So when you're suspended, the lawyer needs to notify the clients by certified mail and then hand over their case file to the client?
Correct.
And then make every effort to try to protect the client's interest?
Absolutely.
By securing counsel or having the client secure counsel.
Absolutely.
So wasn't that done here? At least, maybe not the handing over the files, but wasn't there an attempt to protect the client's interest?
There was, it appeared that there was an attempt, Your Honor. Whether or not that was an attempt to protect himself because the client's money had been spent and there was no money exchanged between Smith III and the respondent, or if it was truly out of his concern for these clients, is not
well, well,
in the
regardless
record.
Of the motivation, though, there was, what does a suspended lawyer do when he or she can't go into court and do anything else? They're to notify the clients, they're to try to say, here's your file, or and does the lawyer have an obligation to try to secure additional counsel?
No, they don't. They just have the obligation to notify their client that they are suspended and unable to handle their case.
So in this case, since Mr. Smith did try to get other counsel to take over the case, he really did something that he wasn't required to do.
He did, and again, his motivation for that, Your Honor, is suspect. Well, however, he did also admit that at some point he became aware that it was clear that Smith III was not going to handle Ms. Huffman and Ms. Payton or Ms. McLeod's cases, and that he should have taken further action, and he didn't.
What was the further action he should have taken?
He could have started by returning their communications and their phone calls. They both testified that they were unable to get in touch with him after he was suspended.
Thank you.
There's a difference between texting somebody and saying, whoops, I'm going to be out for 6 months and I'm not going to be able to handle your case. I'm going to pass it off to another lawyer.
Absolutely.
And informing a client in a letter stating, I cannot, you know, handle your case. Here are your options. And one of them is coming to my office at a prearranged time and picking up your file and going to another attorney. I would recommend you go to Smith III, but you have the option of, and if there are any deadlines looming, put that in the letter to the client to do a meaningful notification of what the situation is. And I'm presuming none of that was done.
You're correct, Your Honor. And that is why a casual attitude in response to this court's order is ineffective. The aggravating factors in this case greatly outweigh the mitigating